Hi, I'm Laura Puccivaltorta with a new podcast, Grandma's Stories. Because grandmas have such important, wonderful stories to tell to the world. We're going to have some guest grandmas, but first, we're going to start with my story, which is about my two grandmothers in Watertown, New York. And then we're going to have some guest readers. And those guest readers own the copyrights to their stories. They're just being kind enough to read on my podcast. I'm a content creator, and my films include Bermuda and the Disease Detective series, which can be found on Amazon and Tubi. Now, here we go with my first story. I have a guest reader who is my son, Dante Valtorta, and he's gonna be doing the dialogue. Now, here's my story, my first story, about my grandmother's body dysmorphia at the age of 66. Here we go. As I sit here, fat and burping, but slender in spirit, I remember both my grandmothers. From my father's side, Italian-American, stoic, a little bit mean, and my mother's side, English-American, snarky, full of jokes. Different, but still the same. Both tall women, both really American, both opinionated, both sarcastic, who suffered from body image hatred, fat fighting, and told me all about it during the 1960s and 1970s. Back then, I didn't really believe them when they said they had once been as thin as me. I thought I would be thin forever. I was a praying mantis, skinny sort of kid who loved to run and play outside, ride a bike, skip rope, do Chinese jump roping, ice skating, skateboarding, and dancing to the music in our living room, making my sisters dance, building snow forts. We were living in Watertown, New York, a town of 25,000 inhabitants plus a military base in northern New York. It was full of lake effect snow from Lake Ontario, ice, churches, misplaced snobbery, and stupid cultural divisions. My mother, Juliet, came from the English-French Daughters of the American Revolution side of town. My father, Larry, Lawrence Pucha Jr., came from across the tracks in the sand flats surrounding St. Anthony's Catholic Church, the Italian ghetto. My parents met in seventh grade in Case Junior High School in a building built by my mother's father's construction company. Both sides of the family had companies of their own, construction, produce. The two families were really prejudiced against each other. They thought they were so different, but they were really exactly the same. Everybody on both sides of the family was always snarky, always fighting. Grandma Pucha. When I was 17, I finally built up the courage to ask my paternal grandmother, Fortunata, Detto Francis, Pangallo Pucha, why she was so prickly with my father, admittedly a challenging, know-it-all, have-another-cigarette-dad kind of guy. She was straight up about it.
Because your parents started dating when they were 13 years old.
I could see her point. Grandma Pucha was an imposing woman with a Statue of Liberty face and pretty scary to me, but with a sixth-grade education and questionable grammar, she wasn't always credited with being as smart as she really was. That was when I first started thinking, yeah, Grandma's right. 13 is too young to start dating. But I never admitted that to her. I just nodded my head. My mother got pretty huffy about it. Grandma Pucha wasn't one of her favorite people.
Your father and I were 14 years old when we met.
But I believed my grandmother. They were 13 when they met. My dad was sarcastic, a self-righteous guy, and you couldn't tell him anything. He did what he wanted. I suspect his attitude had been even worse when he was a teenager and playing football and basketball. Grandma Pucha and I had the same sort of hair. Frizzy, dark, a number 4A on the Tracy Ross Silberstein scale of hair texture, and we kind of looked alike. Years later, in 2011, at my father's memorial party at the Italian American Club, one of my cousins, Jimmy Puccia, said to me, "Wow, you look like Grandma Puccia," and I knew he was right, although I never had thought much about it before. We were both tall, we both had the same luxurious hair, and by then I was getting fat. When I was younger and grasshopper-like, Grandma used to tell me,
"You know, I was really thin when I was younger."
I would look at her sitting there like Jabba the Hutt in her big-ass house in the middle of the flats, shelling peas, watching grandkids, cooking sauce, or watching television, and I would nod and smile. Inside, I was thinking, sure, you were, Grandma. You were thin when you were younger. I never totally believed her. Also, I never thought I would grow up, become a lawyer, make movies, write books, make podcasts, gain weight, and be thinking a lot about Fortunata's life. Her father died in the 1918 flu epidemic. She worked at a shoe factory, married at 18, in an arranged marriage to a guy from Sicily, my grandfather, and having six children, acting strict and cynical and dismissive with her fourth child, Lawrence Richard Puccia Jr., my father, who inherited the same frizzy hair. When I was born, Grandma Puccia reportedly said,
"Oh no, she got the hair."
She straightened hers and it looked like crap. I vowed I would never straighten mine. She made vegetable mess sandwiches with cooked dandelions and other greens. She made a delicious Jewish cheesecake. She liked candy and often said,
"Well, I could eat them things till the cows come home."
She wanted her house to be constantly remodeled so that she could always have the workers around. She was shy about her looks and hated her hair. I loved mine and her big nose. She liked it when my sister, Emily, at 4 years old, complained to her that our parents were fighting. Afterwards, she would call my mother and relate the story, laughing. My mother would get pretty huffy. My father said that his parents had an arranged marriage, but I didn't really know what that meant. Maybe arranged by relatives so that my grandfather could get his papers. As a teenager, I got up the courage to ask Grandma how she met my grandfather, Lorenzo Puccia. He was a distant cousin of hers from Cerda, Sicily. She smiled.
"When we first met, he told me to fix me some food. I threw a hairbrush at him and said, 'Fix it yourself.'"
Apparently, my grandfather was not displeased.
"Oh, I got me a feisty one,"
he said in a Sicilian dialect, and the rest was history. I remember them having a happy marriage, six children, relatives always nearby. Work, work, work. My grandfather, who was short with flat hair, started off working for the railroad. Then at the age of 37, he got blinded by a doctor's mistake. It was reported wrongly in the newspaper that he collapsed in the waiting room. I found that article from the newspaper and showed it to my grandmother. She snatched it out of my hands.
"That's not what happened,"
she said. "Apparently the doctor's hands were shaking. He took some kind of pills before doing the sinus exam. The hospital bills were mysteriously paid for. My grandfather was blind for about a year, and then he mysteriously got better." The family lived with relatives. Teeny Ma, my great-grandmother. Then they started a restaurant with entertainment such as a dancing bull, according to my father, on the flats. The restaurant failed, and no wonder. My grandmother was kind of a bad cook. No finesse. The next venture, a produce company, El Puccia and Sons, was a success. They delivered produce from Syracuse to the restaurants and schools in the North Country. They built a big-ass house, much grander than the others, next to Teeny Ma. Grandma Puccia's mother, my great-grandmother, Giuseppina Castro Pangallo Molinari, was by contrast a short, slight, smiley person who ran a stand fruits, flowers, and vegetables alongside Bellew Avenue in the flats. Unlike the other Italian stands down the road, she and her second husband grew all her own flowers and produce in the field and back of the house. She was a small person, which was why everyone called her Teeny Ma. She was married at 14 to Rocco Pangello from Reggio Calabria, who died in the 1918 flu epidemic at the age of 30. They had three children. There is one picture left of him. Many of his descendants look like Rocco, tall and menacing with the Roman nose and the frizzy hair. At the age of 60, Teeny Ma married her second husband, Giuseppe Molinari, who came to the United States from Italy via Brazil and two previous marriages, and spoke excellent Italian, no dialect. My dad spent a lot of his childhood with these grandparents of his who lived right next door. Teeny Ma was kind to him when he had earaches and stuff. I spent time with them too. I can remember the sharp green smell of their greenhouse. These days, I don't like going to produce stands because I know that many of them, like the ones down the street from Teeny Ma, buy their stuff from non-local sources. My other grandmother was Cola Annis Combs, whose family came to the United States in the 1600s and the 1700s and the 1800s from England. Her mother, Clarabel Clemens, was a loud woman who marched for temperance. They were distantly related to Samuel Clemens, also known as Mark Twain. My mother, Juliet, and her mother, Annis, were both good-looking women, skinny, although they always complained about being too fat. Annis was never fat, but she thought she was. She wasted time worrying about her weight. Annis trained as a dental hygienist and married Stuart Kenneth Wager, a civil engineer. He was Ken, she was Annis. They were fashionable middle-class people who wanted nice clothes, houses, and cars. They believed in college, and my mother rebelled against them as much as possible. For years, they all lived with their three children in a house on Flower Avenue in Watertown, along with the family of Ken's brother. Annis, my grandmother, wanted her own house. This memory bothered my mother, Juliet, because she thought Annis should have had her own house sooner. My mother definitely thought that the woman should always get what she wants. My mother also said that she should have taken over the family construction business, but because she was a girl, that was never an option. Instead, it was given to a male cousin who ran it into the ground. By the time I was born in 1958, Annis and Ken did have their own house, six blocks from where we lived, and I walked there often to hang out with my grandparents. Their house had a screened-in porch and special bedrooms for the grandchildren. They cooked and ate steak, potatoes, and bacon on a regular basis. I enjoyed the food at their house. I enjoyed the company and the humor. I enjoyed the screened-in porch. They had plenty of books to read for kids and for adults. I even enjoyed their Mitch Miller records. I was their oldest grandchild. My grandfather had an office near the front door. He answered the phone and said,
"Hello."
He also told a lot of bad jokes.
"What's in the road ahead?"
He pronounced hors d'oeuvres like it was horse d'oeuvres. My father adapted some of these.
"Yeah, you'll never get ahead, but you could use one."
My father's family was skeptical of my mother's family, and vice versa. Grandpa Lorenzo chastised my mother and me and my sisters for never getting our hands dirty. Nobody was correct here. My sisters and I all worked in the garden and helped with the cows. The weird treatment of my mother's family toward my father was subtle. They called him cute, and they fussed over his hair and his humor. They failed to take him seriously or hire him at Wager Brothers Construction. My father was not that cute. He was hardworking, driven, and very calculating. His skin was a bit darker than mine. My mother's family thought he was different. I sensed my grandparents' attitude towards Dad's exoticism and played it to my advantage. Grandma and Grandpa also fussed over my hair and treated me like a princess. He was my dad. If he was exotic, then I must be exotic. But all that was a lie. I was very American. At one point, as a teenager, I had a revelation. I realized everybody here is an American and nobody is exotic. Vesti la Giubba by the Sicilian Ruggero Leoncavallo was being sung on television at Anna's and Ken's house. I remember pretending that I knew how to speak Italian. That song is about a clown, I said. I wanted to learn Italian, but there was no opportunity. My Italian grandparents, who spoke a Sicilian dialect, never taught the language to anyone. They were told not to, that this would be bad for their children. Italian was never taught in any of my childhood schools filled with Italian-American children. And until I grew up, got married to an Italian from Milan, and studied Italian at Duke for a year, I never had a chance to learn the language. Of course, my husband, Marco, has helped me. For the past 40 years, I have been learning Italian, but good. Every Italian-American, every person who's interested, should have an opportunity to learn this beautiful language and the history of Italy and of Italians in this country. The Roman Republic, the Renaissance, Dante Alighieri, Boccaccio, Amerigo Vespucci, Cristoforo Colombo, the Italian resistance and communism in the 1940s, La Dolce Vita, Tom Perata. If people don't know about the lynchings of Italian Americans in 1891 in New Orleans, that's just another failure of our school system. Humans have been around for about 250,000 years, and the latest 15,000 have been disastrous for the planet. Personally, I think our world would be much healthier if the Asians, English, and Spanish had not moved to the Americas and utilized wars and the forced work of Africans to build up this country. But we're all here now, related genetically and culturally. Better to know what happened. Better to study the truth about everyone. My father, who was 100% Italian, which means, really, Spanish and Middle Eastern as much as it means Sicilian, never learned to speak the language and never visited Italy. I find this weird and obnoxious. Our teachings in American schools are disproportionately Anglo-centric. I adore English literature. Shakespeare, Jane Austen, Kate Atkinson. And we learn British history very well in school, but we learn nothing about Italy after World War II, a very important time when you look at what's happening in the U.S. today. We didn't learn enough about Black history or women's suffrage. I want to learn about all of the people who live in the United States, everybody. Otherwise, our country will be a failure. Thank you, and we'll see you next time with Grandma's Stories from Other Grandmothers. Dante, thank you very much.
Thank you.